Joshua's videos kept popping up on my and my friend's social media feeds months before I met him, so I was delighted when we sat down to talk about his journey to online fame. He also shared some exclusives he hasn't made public before. In this bonus episode of Cross Continentals, join me, your host Momoe, as we take a break from regular programming to get better acquainted with the guy from my and maybe your social media feed, Joshua Thompson. If you like this show, please subscribe. You can also check out the Instagram page. You'll find the link in the episode description. Joshua.
Yes.
How would you describe what you do online?
I do YouTube and I interview... I never know how to explain this, but I interview people that grew up in Japan with no Japanese heritage. So, for instance, I'm of British descent, Scottish to be specific, but I was born and raised in Japan. Even my parents grew up in Japan, but my grandparents came from Australia, New Zealand, the UK. I interview people like me, like looking fully Caucasian, born and raised in Japan, fully African, fully Hispanic, whatever. Non-Japanese people that grew up in Japan is the people I interview. And we go deep dive into identity issues, what it was like to be born and raised in Japan with not looking Japanese, not looking East Asian and all that. So we talk about identity crises and whatever we went through and how it was like to navigate through that. But I also do on Instagram and I make short videos about funny Japanese people that I've met in my life, and I mimic them, impersonate them, and it's gaining a lot of views, thankfully. And it seems like Japanese people relate to that. Like, they're like, these people exist. And on the other hand, there's a lot of foreigners, non-Japanese people, that are like, yes, I've seen this in Japan before, or I've experienced this before. So it's like a good mix of non-Japanese and Japanese people relating to what I'm making. So I feel like I'm almost like making a bridge between Japan and the rest of the world, almost, like, because I put English subtitles on, and so me looking British, speaking Japanese, and kind of just doing comedic stuff, I feel like non-Japanese people are understanding that even Japanese people have a sense of humor. You know, like almost like even. They have a similar sense of humor almost, you know, like some people say like Japanese humor is like really different to the West, but I think it's not too different. It's just how it's conveyed. And I think I'm like kind of bridging two worlds, East and West.
So what's the difference in the sense of humor? Or I mean, maybe no difference, but, you know, What do you think is the perception and the actual sense of humor?
I never know how to explain this, but I feel like in Japan, there's a lot of laugh from making fun of people, pointing out differences and all that. I feel like in the West, it's not too accepted to do that. And I feel like in Japan, it was very much accepted to make fun of women that's like fat or overweight and all that. So I have a half Pakistani, half Indian friend that was born and raised in Japan, and he's a comedian, proper comedian in Japan, and his punchline is his introduction saying like, I'm half Pakistani, half Indian, but I grew up in Omiya, Saitama, which is like the suburbs of Tokyo. Like, it's being from Saitama is almost like a funny thing for Japanese people, because there's a saying da Saitama, meaning like lame Saitama, dasai, they're playing with words, but dasai means like lame, right? So that's his punchline, like, and the people laugh at the fact that he's from Omiya, which is like, you know, from the hood almost. So, but for me, that is not funny. Like, that's just a fact. But I know where they're coming from, why it's funny, because I grew up with the same humor. But I feel like in the West, like, a little bit, there is a little bit of that. Maybe like a British Indian person from like a really, really English area. And that might get some laugh, but I don't know. It's like a bit, in Japan, it's more about pointing out differences. I think that's the humor in Japan, yeah.
Do you feel like your videos are more Japanese humor, or is it more Western humor, or is it a mix of both?
I think it's a mix of both because I understand both. And I, monomane, impersonating, is a big thing in Japan. Monomane is like huge, and that's my favorite, and that's my humor as well. So my one of my favorite comedians in Japan were Yanagihara Kanako. She was huge in Japan like maybe 15 years ago when I was growing up. She's the best monomane genin, impersonating comedian. So she would do like shop workers, like moms and Japanese moms and all that. So my humor comes from that. And I kind of knew that people from the West would like understand this humor. Like they'll think it's funny because I'm very expressive, you know? So I think it's a mix of both, yeah.
How did your online career start?
So I was first acting since I was like 17, 18. I was doing TV commercials, like TV shows, whatever that involved a foreigner. Like whenever they needed a Caucasian looking guy, I would be on set. You know, I would like do crazy stuff. I was that token foreigner on Japanese TV.
Even though your Japanese is fluent and yeah, you're born and raised there, you're yeah, still cast for all the foreigner roles.
Yeah, so that was quite challenging in a way, because deep down I'm like, but I'm not this token crazy foreigner, but I had to act as if I'm this crazy token foreigner that doesn't speak any Japanese. So it was like a bit, I feel like imposter almost, but yeah, that's what I did. Then I started doing podcasts in 2020. Then I did radio in Okinawa for like 2 months. Then my cousin started doing YouTube, so I was like, maybe I can be the producer. Then I started helping her out. Then I started my own channel, but that was in English. But it was doing okay, like better than most people that just started, because I had a background with my cousin. But when I started doing my YouTube channel in Japanese, that's when it really took off. And then I started doing Instagram, and that really took off, and so that's my main job right now. But yeah, that's how I started my online career.
And are you still doing stuff in English, or are you just focused on Japanese content now?
For YouTube, I only do in Japanese. Like, it's just that's the easier way right now. But I do put subtitles on for my Instagram videos. Instagram Reels, they call it. But yeah, but I do want to create more English content, but I need a bigger team. I'm my own boss. I'm the only one in my team right now. So yeah, if I get a bigger team, or if I even get a team, like, yeah, I want to start making English content.
Mm-hmm. But even by yourself, you gained a lot of success very quickly. You've got about 45,000 followers on YouTube, or subscribers, I should say, and you got to that number like in less than a year, I think, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
How was it like becoming so successful so quickly?
Because I started my acting career since I was 18, and I was on TV. Like, it wasn't like I was a nobody coming out of nowhere last year. So for me, I was always in the show biz. I was always an entertainer, but I wasn't really hugely recognized. Like, some people might notice me, some people might come up to me and be like, oh, are you on TV or something? But it was never as big as now. When my YouTube really took off last year, the main reason was because I did a video with my sister last year, April 2023. April. I feel like that was really new, unique to the Japanese audience. Like, two Caucasian siblings talking about being born and raised in Japan, but moving to London and experiencing new stuff in London. So that was quite new to the Japanese audience, I think. Then I just started creating more interview videos and all that. I felt like it was really rewarding, is the word I want to use here. I think it was really rewarding, because it took me 10 years, to be quite frank, to come to this point. Like, I had to go through a lot of even depression and like all that, because I knew I had the ability to make something great, But I never knew how to go about it. Like, I never knew what exactly to do. But the moment I found my niche, it just took off. So it's all about finding your own niche, your audience, and just running with it, you know? So yeah, last year when it really took off, I was just like, I finally found my niche, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So even though it looked like in 1 year you got a lot of attention, it was actually years and years, a decade effectively of hard work that led to that point.
Exactly. So I think my acting experience really helps me create videos on YouTube. Like, it's, YouTube is essentially about acting. It's about even being an interviewer. Like, it's about acting as an interviewer, you know, and like asking questions as if you know your shit. So it really, and getting used to the camera even is like, that took me some time because I had to act in front of like hundreds of people for a commercial. And you're like kind of forced to get used to being like in front of a camera around people and just acting in a second in front of so many people. So I think that I started the harder way. I think usually it's the opposite. It's from like short videos, then YouTube, then acting. I think I went the total opposite. Acting, YouTube, then influencer. So the influencer stuff is really easy for me. I can just put my camera, I can just start doing whatever because I'm just so used to the camera now.
And obviously your content is very linked to your background and you've got a really interesting backstory. You were born and raised in Japan, but it's not just you. It's your parents who were also born and raised in Japan. And it's the grandparents who actually came to Japan. What brought them to Japan?
So they were Protestant missionaries in Japan from the 50s and 60s. So my dad's parents, they moved to Japan in late 50s, I think. They met in Japan, in Sapporo, to be specific. They got married there. But my dad was born in London because they were back in London for like a year. And that's why I get a British passport. But my mom's parents, they met in New Zealand. They moved to Japan together in the 60s. And my dad and mom grew up in Japan. But my dad only went to international school or homeschooled himself. And he went to college in the States. So he only got English education. On the other side, my mom only went to Japanese school. So even though they're like two Caucasian, like white people that grew up in Japan, like they also had like very different education as well. So it's like I got a mix of both because I was sent to international school and Japanese school. So I feel like I'm a mix of both worlds all mm-hmm. the time.
How did your parents meet?
So it was through work. My dad was interpreting for this guy from London. And he, I think because he knew my family already, or like it was through introduction from somebody. He was back in Hokkaido for work. He stayed at my mom's place. They met each other. Their initial thought was like, oh, I would never date this person. Like they, from both sides, they were like, ugh, nah. From my mom's side, it was like, oh, another missionary kid, like he must be very strict. And she's the total opposite. Like she's like a very fun, like always laughing, charismatic actress type. Yeah, so that was her initial thought of my dad. But turns out he's like very creative, fun, nice guy. So they started doing mailing and just...
Letters. Generational difference here.
what are those called? Yeah, letters. Then they got married. My dad was already in Tokyo since he was like 12 or something. So my mom moved to Tokyo when she was like 26. They stayed there. I was born. I'm the third child of like three. And we grew up kind of near that Christian international school. My dad went there, but I went there from the age of 12, 13. So I had to study English from the age of like 10 with my mom at home. And I had to take a test to get into that school. I went to that school, but I hated it.
Why did you hate it?
It was a very strict Christian school and very American. So, and I had already gone to Japanese school for like 6 years. So
actually, can you do like a run through? So first 6 years, Japanese school.
Elementary school, 6 years. 2 years at that international school, then went back to Japanese school for like 8 months for middle school. Then I graduated from a Japanese middle school, then went into Japanese high school, public Japanese high school. Then I just started working in this in the entertainment industry. So yeah.
So 2 years at the international / American school. Why did you hate it?
It was a very strict Christian, American Christian school. And I wasn't really, even though I did live in the States when I was the age of three to five, I feel like I wasn't like very too familiar with the culture. Like I knew what they were like or how they act. Having gone to the Japanese school already, like it made me pretty much very Japanese. My humor was very Japanese. So I didn't know how to blend in. And I feel like I had to become American to, you know, just survive in the school, I guess. So then I feel like studying in English was quite tough. You know, I was failing a lot of classes. And the word for that was efutta. Fail, efutta. Where I was like efutteru all the time. And I was crying to my parents a lot of nights, and I'm just like, just get me out of that school. Like, I just want to go back to Japanese school. Like, just get me out of there. And I stayed. My mom was always convincing me to stay, please, Joshua, stay.
Like, why did she want you to stay?
I think she wanted me to get English education. Like, understandably, of course, like, you want your kids to be bilingual. And so I tried my best. I stayed for one more year. Then I was like, no, I'm sorry, parents, but I can't do this. Mm-hmm. So I went back to Japanese school. I was like happiest kid in the world. Like I was so happy to reunite with my Japanese friends from elementary school. I knew half of them, of course, like half were people that from other elementary schools, but I knew half of the people. They were like, oh my gosh, you're back. Like, we love you. And like, just, they welcomed me. I just made so many new friends as well. And it was just so fun. And I had a great, great, great experience in high school, Japanese high school. It was like, it was a really regular high school. It wasn't like a bunch of like smart people trying to get into college. No, it wasn't like that. So we were just playing around, like taking piss every day, basically, and going to karaoke after school every day, like just doing whatever, just living my life. So it was like a huge contrast from the international school I went to, even though it's like those two schools are not too far from each other, but it was like two different worlds. American Christian school to a very normal Japanese high school.
In one of your videos, I saw you were talking about learning English, and obviously talking to you now, no one would ever think that you ever felt uncomfortable speaking English, but apparently there was a time in your life when English was a struggle for you, right? Which probably related to why you felt maybe so out of place in the American school. What was your journey like learning English?
So first, my first language used to be English when I lived in the States, in Virginia Beach, to be precise. But
wait, you were born in Japan, right?
I was born in Japan, moved to the States when I was like two.
Okay.
Then I just turned three right away. And then I came back right before I turned five. So I just say 3 to 5. But I was in the States when I was 3 to 5. I just switched to English. My first language was English. I was only speaking English.
Did you speak English at home?
Yeah, to everybody. I didn't speak any Japanese. Then we went back to Japan. I was put into Japanese preschool. Then I just switched to Japanese right away. And from there, I only spoke Japanese, like even to my parents. I only spoke Japanese. But I was like sent to like Bible camps that, like English camps, basically. And I, like my English might come out sometimes, but like it's only like 6 days a year or something. So, and even my cousins, like they're like all half Japanese, so they all speak Japanese. So even playing with my cousins, relatives, all my aunties, uncles, they all speak Japanese. So I would like just use Japanese, you know. Then I had to get into the international school, like the American school. So, and that pressure was so severe my whole life, but from the age of like 8, always in the back of my head, I was like, shit, I have to study English. I really have to improve my English. I have to get into this international school. Like, it was always so stressful. Then I started studying with my mom, as I said before, like from the age of 10. It was so stressful. Then it kind of got better, kind of, but I didn't really pass the test to get in, but they give me, I was like the special case, so like I was an exception. Like they're like, yeah, his English will improve. But it didn't really improve in the school, to be honest, but I was like put into ESL class, English as second language class. That was pretty humiliating, kind of. Like it was like, I was the only white kid in the ESL class. The rest are like non-white people. Yeah, I kind of felt ashamed to be put into this ESL class and studying English, trying to improve English. Even like Japanese students that went to international school their whole life, they weren't in that class. Like they didn't have to get into the ESL class. But me looking Caucasian and being put into ESL class, like that was pretty, that kind of hurt my pride as well. Even that, I couldn't stand that humiliation, I guess. So that's why I quit at the end. And I was like, why can't I just study in Japanese, you know? And even that international school, they were like pretty much very anti-Japan because it's an American school. They want their students to speak English, of course, and they want the students to improve their English. But at the same time, they mostly only speak English, the teachers, and they want to control the class, right? So whenever we spoke Japanese in class, they would hate it. Like they even made me pay money. Like I had to pay like 5 yen into the piggy bank.
Mm-hmm. It's like 5 cents US,
yeah.
Or 5p UK. Yeah, it's very little money.
But little money, but like it was like torturing to be punished or fined whenever you spoke your own mother tongue. Like it was very, like even now I'm like quite, I would just say I'm quite traumatized. My voice was taken away. I feel like my voice was taken away because I couldn't speak Japanese at the school. Of course it's an international school, but I feel like it should have been like half and half. But they were like pretty much 100% English, but they did have Japanese classes from high school, but the middle school part was pretty much like only speak English, become American. So I feel like if it's an international school in Japan, they should be teaching about Japan more, but their mentality was pretty much like America first. And it's even a missionary school. So for me back then, I'm like, if you want to preach the gospel to the locals, I think you might want to study Japanese more, you know? But that school was pretty much like, no, we're not doing that. But thankfully, my family feel like their mentality was very much like locals first. Study Japanese, get to talk to the locals. But I feel like back in the days, like missionary families, they didn't let their kids talk to the Japanese people because it was going against the rules of the missionary community to talk to the locals because it was, they were, I think it was coming from arrogance. They were very much arrogant mentality where they think they're better. Don't talk to the locals, like don't talk to the kids there. But thankfully,
actually, can I stop you there? Because there's the inherent irony of it, right? Because they're coming to Japan to convert the Japanese to Christianity, I assume. But then they also feel like they shouldn't mix with the local population. So I imagine it's kind of hard to convert people unless you go and mix with them. So how does that weird oxymoron, or I mean, to me, strange oxymoron, but maybe to other people, note, how do they put it in their heads? How do they explain it to themselves?
Is what I want to know as well. But my grandparents weren't like that. Like they were pretty much like study Japanese, talk to the locals, preach to the locals. Like they really assimilated. They pretty much adapted to the culture really quick. All four of my grandparents spoke amazing Japanese, and they're like, they love kanji, like Chinese characters. They're like pretty much like hands-on, down-to-earth people. But the missionary school I went to, their mentality was like, we're better. You listen to what we say. Very, very arrogant, to be quite frank. So I couldn't stand that mentality either. So thankfully, my family wasn't like that, but I saw that in front of my eyes, and I was like, this is very weird. Like, it's very, very contradicting. Two contradicting ideas, like trying to fit into one box, but it's not working. You know, as you said, it's like very oxymoron shit. So, can I swear on this podcast?
You would be the first one.
Oh, yeah, I should cut all the part.
You can cut the swearing.
I don't want to say... I don't want to be that guy.
I mean, shit is okay, I think. Okay. Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Tone it down. So, I didn't want to go through that, so, yeah.
So, your grandparents were missionaries. Were your parents missionaries as well?
Not at all. Like, so, they stayed in Japan. They were involved in church work, but they weren't actively involved, and they did their own stuff. My mom, her background's a dancer, and... she loves entertainment stuff. And my dad, he's a media producer. Like, he was, like, a producer. And he was a cameraman as well. So I think they weren't missionaries, but they were involved in church work, but not so much.
Mm-hmm. But religion was a big part of your lives.
They're Christians, and I went to church every Sunday. I had to go because my grandparents were there. Like, if I didn't show up, it's a huge, huge scandal, you know? It's like, why isn't Joshua here? Like, even my other family, like my dad's auntie's family and their kids, my cousins, will be there. So not going is, like, a huge problem, I guess. I don't know. So I went every Sunday, and, like, of course, like, I still believe. I still have faith, but I haven't really had a good experience with church growing up, so I have a weird relationship with the church. But yeah, it's been part of my life, my whole life, yeah.
So do you separate church and religion?
I do. I separate my faith to church, because church is just a place where humans go. Mm-hmm. And I think faith is about you and God. Your relationship with you and God. So I don't want other people in the church affecting, influencing my faith that I have. So I think I kind of quite divide it. Yeah.
What is your relationship with God?
To be discovered. I think I pray to God. I feel like he's my oasis in a way. I wouldn't say the person, but he's
being
that I talk to, that I just talk and I just say my problems. I'm like, what should I do? I'm just like, is it a they? Is God a they?
Nowadays, I don't know.
I think it was he. Yeah, he did it. Like, capital he. So I do talk to him a lot, and that's my relationship.
Does it help in life?
I think so. It does help me. I feel like I've washed off some dirt after talking to him, and it does feel better. I do feel better after talking to him.
What is the missionary religious community in Japan like?
Ooh, that's a very interesting question. But I think there is a missionary community in Japan. And it's mostly Americans, I would say, and I think so. But there's some Germans, Swiss, British, Australian, whatever. But there's even a foreign missionary village in Japan. There's like two that I know. One is in Nojiri, Nagano, Nojiri-ko, Lake Nojiri. That's where all the American missionaries go, and they have like summer houses and all that. It's beautiful. All the houses look like American houses. It's huge, beautiful. But of course, my family couldn't afford it because they grew up really poor. I grew up poor. Like, we're like a typical poor missionary family. But
wait, why do they have money and you guys were poor if you're all part of the same community?
So it depends on which mission you're with. So American missions, they have huge money. But my grandparents, they went independent.
Fascinating.
I think they went independent quite, like, right away, right after they got to Japan or something. I forgot.
What does it mean to go independent?
So they don't have a mission. So they don't have a particular mission supporting, financially supporting them.
So they just like freelance missionary?
Freelance. So the church in Japan or church back home might send them money, but they don't have a huge mission supporting them. But usually...
That sounds like a drastic move, no?
Yeah, like rebels. Like all four of my grandparents were rebels. Like, so I really respect them for that. Mm-hmm. But
do you know why they did that?
I think they didn't fully agree with their missions back then. So I wouldn't name them the mission names, but some people might know. But yeah, so that's why I think my parents weren't like rich growing up. Like, but a lot of American missionaries, they're financially stable. So they have like huge summer houses or whatever.
And that's all paid by their missions?
Or? I'm not fully sure how it works, but I think they get salary or I really don't know. Mm-hmm. But they all seem well off. But I got invited to those houses. We did have a connection to the community, but I felt like I didn't fully belong to the community. I feel like I was half in, half out, half into that community, half in my own Japanese bubble or like church bubble. So it was like a lot going on in my life, like so many communities that I belong to that I almost felt like I was a different person in every community. Like on one hand, I'm like this American guy trying to be American, or in my family, I'm just my normal Joshua. In Japanese school, I'm like this Japanese token foreigner, funny foreigner that speaks perfect Japanese. At church, I'm trying to impress everybody for being a missionary grandson, I guess. I don't know. So I'm like all of this going on in my life. But I feel like I've had to learn to become this one person wherever I go, because I feel like I was trying to impress everybody, wherever it went, but...
I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, but now I'm just like, I am who I am. I can't impress everybody, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. And how was that journey? What made you, you know, what is it, gradual progression to becoming more comfortable in your skin? Or was it a drastic switch that suddenly happened?
It was drastic, quite drastic. First, it was like, coming out of high school, going into showbiz, meeting other foreigners in Japan, that was like eye-opening. Like I got to talk to real foreigners in Japan, not from the missionary community, like real foreigners. So, and I got to use English with them. I got to talk about my experience growing up in Japan and their perspective on life in Japan is like very much different to mine, but it was somewhat relatable because we also look similar. So I got to relate to a lot of foreigners in Japan. And I was like, it was really refreshing. I was like, finally somebody understands me, you know. I'm like, finally I can talk to people besides my family, you know. And that was really refreshing. Then I came to the UK one summer to Brighton in 2018, and that really changed how I perceived myself, or how I felt, because I finally felt like I was a person from Japan. I was not that token foreigner. I was not gaijin no Joshua, gaijin, foreigner from Japan. So when I moved to Brighton, I was like, I was that Japanese boy. Like I was that Japanese boy from Japan. Strange, but Japanese boy from Japan. So I finally felt accepted and I felt like I could just be myself, you know. I didn't have to be like, oh, I didn't have to explain myself every time, and I just felt accepted. And people just liked me as who I was. And I feel like the self that I was in elementary school came back finally when I was like 22 or something. And I was like, wow, this is like really nice. Like people not judging me from how I look. It's like really refreshing. So that's why I love the UK, and that's why I keep coming back. And yeah, I love it here.
Mm-hmm. Because you feel comfortable, right? Like,
yeah.
Is that why? And
I don't have to explain why I speak English. I don't have to explain why I speak the local language, you know? Mm-hmm. But in a way, like, I'm not from here, so it's kind of strange that I even speak English. But people are not impressed every time somebody speaks English. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, oh, wow, your English is amazing. No, you know, right? Like, nobody. Like, maybe if I look East Asian, I might get that sometimes. Like, I get that.
But in London, I don't think people write questions.
Not really. Yeah. But, or there's a mutual understanding that that's rude.
Yes.
That is.
And also you have people from everywhere, right? So it's very common to see someone who looks like totally non-English, speaking fluent English, you know, yeah. Went to like Oxbridge and all that.
Exactly. So that became my mentality as well after living in the UK. Mm-hmm. And whenever I go back to Japan, still people are like, oh my God, your Japanese is so good. Why do you have that hair color? Oh my gosh. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm just like, this is not the first, you know, it gets old. It really does get old, but I don't think there's a solution here. Like, I am a major minority in Japan. Like, being white, being born and raised in Japan is like total minority. Maybe 0.01%, I don't know. And I get it. I know where they're coming from. I know what kind of education they had. I know what kind of TV they watch. So I understand, but it's just, I'm just like, I'm not doing that today, you know? Yeah.
It's a common theme on this podcast, people just feeling exhausted by all the questions people ask them. So,
yeah,
absolutely. You mentioned acting. So after high school, you entered the Japanese acting world, entertainment industry. What was that like?
It was so fun. It was the dream I always dreamed of. I grew up with Japanese TV. I love Japanese TV. It was my dream to be on Japanese TV. And I was like, I got to work with so many famous people in Japan. Like, it was amazing. But I also got to see the downside of it. Like, it was very stressful, strict environment, and they're pretty much in their bubble. Like, there's Japan and there's showbiz in Japan, almost. Like, they're so different. They live in their own bubble. Like, it was like pretty much a very unique, different world that I knew. So I had to adapt to that. I had to learn the terminologies and all that, and it was very challenging sometimes. Like, Japanese staff might treat foreigners really badly. Like, they were like openly treat foreigners badly because they knew they wouldn't understand anyways. Like, they're like, oh, the foreigners being dirty, or like they're like being disrespectful. So they would like be very, very harsh. Like, it almost sounds like they were talking to kids.
So the Japanese staff would say things about the foreigners, but not directly to foreigners.
Oh,
right?
Both. Like, they would like talk behind their backs or say it directly. Like, shh. I've heard a staff say they were like swearing at foreigners. Like, oh, one time this staff was like, "Do your shit," screaming at the foreigner, like, quote unquote foreigners, like screaming like, "Do your shit," kind of thing. I'm just like, whoa, like, you really crossed the line. Like, so I had to report and to my agency, like, telling them what happened, and like, I had a meeting with them, and like, it was like their general like understanding, or I don't know, general mindset is like, foreigners don't want to work. They complain, they don't want to work. It's true to an extent, but they're also professionals. So they know how to switch. They know how to have fun, but they also know how to work. But for Japanese people, it's like, if they're not showing 100% throughout the day, you're not a professional. But for like non-Japanese people, it's like, you need to, you know, you need to have fun in life. Like, you need to rest, you need to have lunch, you need to chat, you need to have fun and all that. So, and that's where I learned how to be a foreigner. That's because when I first started my career as a actor, I was so Japanese. I was so polite, never complained. I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do. I would like sit properly. But like 2 years in, I was like, just like other foreigners. Like, I was complaining. I was like, what's this lunch, you know, kind of attitude. That's how I learned how to be a foreigner. Yeah.
How do you think the Japanese entertainment industry is specific, or like, what are the unique aspects of it that you think, you know, are interesting that are maybe like nowhere else?
It's very over the top. So over the top. Like, I think many people have seen Japanese commercials. It's super over the top. So they do that to create this fake world from reality in Japan, I think. Because in the reality of Japan is like very rigid, very stressful, but at least when they turn on the TV, they want to see something fake, very unusual, so not Japanese, like so like over the top stuff. So in Japan, like they do crazy, crazy stuff. But what's happening behind that is like very, very strict people directing that to be stupid. You're being stupid professionally almost, is how I see the Japanese showbiz. So it's pretty interesting. It's very, very cool stuff they do. And I got to be part of it, and I got to do very, very crazy stuff like dancing while there's like wind, feathers, water coming at me, like dancing, or like I'm like screaming while they, sprinkle soybeans. While I'm like screaming, and that didn't get used at the end, but just very, very crazy world. But
so it's physically really demanding, I imagine, as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think that's my niche as well. Like, that's the kind of thing I like, being crazy professionally. So it really matched my personality as well. But I think at the end, I got tired of being a token foreigner. You know, I got tired being a foreigner in my own country. Is how I say all the time. I'm like, no, I'm not this foreigner. I'm not speaking English. I'm not gonna act in English. I'm not gonna be this crazy, stupid foreigner that you want. No, I'm from Japan, is the attitude I got from the UK. Mm-hmm. You know, so at the end, one time I went into this audition, and I think the director wanted me to have an accent in Japanese. But I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And I just used my own normal Japanese, and he liked it. He was like, wow, you're Japanese, I want you, like that's what I want to do. So I got casted, but on set he was like, it's so funny to see a white guy amongst Japanese people in a bushitsu, is like a school sports room. Each sports members, they get their own room, and like, it's like, it was a setting of bushitsu, and the director was like, it's so shuru to see a white guy amongst Japanese people for this commercial. And shuru means like, so it derives from the word surrealism, from the English word surrealism, and they made it into Japanese sounding shuru. And so it's like being very surreal, unusual, unique, funny, and all that. And then that really, I knew who I was, but that again made me question like, oh, so it does look funny. Like it does, and that, because that was my whole life, you know, I was the only white kid in Japan, and like, so he was basically saying like, your whole life was funny, you know, that's how I took it. But at the same time, like, it's a commercial, it should be funny, you know, like I signed up for this, I knew what I signed up for, so, and I'm still getting paid, so whatever. So, but it was kind of sad to hear a Japanese director, like, one of the top directors in Japan making a commercial having that mentality still into 2022. I'm like, wow, of course Japan's still stuck in the 80s, you know. So that made me realize, and then I just left Japan. So yeah, that's my history with Japanese entertainment industry. Yeah,
where did you leave Japan?
So yeah, as I said before, I think I got tired of being a foreigner in my own country. Like people complimenting my Japanese, and like the people pointing out differences. Oh, your eyes are blue, your hair is blonde, blah, blah, blah. Like I got that when I was a kid. Like, and it was fun. When you're a kid, you get attention. It's nice. It's fun. But when you're like 28 and people like pointing out differences all the time, you're just like, nah, that's old. And I just got so tired. And I feel like I stand out a lot because I'm quite tall as well. in Japan, I'm just like, no, I can't do this anymore. But at the same time, I love, love, love Japan. It's my home country. It's my first language. Japanese is my first language. I love Japanese literature, media. Like, I love, love, love Japan. But just being there, it's quite stressful sometimes. So that's why I decided to leave, have a refreshing time in London. Yeah.
And your family still lives in Japan. You're the only one in London. What kind of relationship do you have with your family?
So they support what I do. They love, love, love what I do. And I think they want me back in Japan, of course. I love my family. I'm very, very, very close to my family. I do struggle because I'm very family oriented. 80% of the time I was with my family in Japan. Like, I did hang out with my friends. I love my friends. I love going out, but my life was centered around being with my family. So I do miss my family time, but at the same time, I do think it was quite necessary for me to be in London and like gain a new perspective, do new things and all that. And they understand that. Like they're totally on board of me being abroad and being in London, like doing something new and all that. So, yeah.
And your sister Alicia, she also moved to London, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was that time together like?
It was very interesting because I was convincing her to move to London because she was not feeling great in Japan. And I was like, maybe if you move to London, you might feel better. Because that's what I got. That's what I got in 2018. When I moved to Brighton, my depression went away right away. Right away. It was like instant. And so I thought maybe my sister might have the same experience, you know. But it went the total opposite. It got worse. It got worse, and she didn't really like London. She didn't like the atmosphere here. She didn't really resonate. She didn't really click with the city. So fair enough. That's what suits her. But she went back within 5 months. But she's grateful that she moved to London because she got to reappreciate her life in Japan. She now knows what's important in her life, what she appreciates, and how much it's important to be around family for her. So, yeah.
Why do you think you reacted so differently to being in London?
I feel like I pick up other people's energy a lot. I don't know. And when I'm in Japan, I just feel more uncomfortable than my sister, I guess. Because my brother, he doesn't really care. He's comfortable in his own life, but I just pick up subtle things more. And I think that's why in London, there's less of that tension that's in Japan. Like, people think the opposite. There's more tension in Japan and in London than in Tokyo. But it's a very different type of tension, you know. And that tension, like, London's atmosphere just kind of suits me more. But I do love Tokyo. I love going back. I think I can live there again, but at the moment, like, London really suits me. But I'm leaving soon, but I always want to come back here. Yeah.
Where are you going?
I want to travel around Europe. I want to go full nomad, see what it's like in East Europe or Central Europe and all that, maybe Poland. But I think after that, I will go back to Japan for a little bit, then see where life takes me. Yeah.
Do you miss Japan?
I think I do. Family, cats, friends, busy life in Tokyo, my showbiz, my acting life in Japan. I do miss it. But yeah, so I just want to go back and forth, I guess.
What can your fans expect to see on your YouTube channel and on Instagram?
Maybe traveling around Europe, meeting interesting, nice people in Europe and interviewing them and me experiencing new things. And back to Japan, maybe I'll do more vlogs. And one thing I really want to do is, like, if I have a commercial shoot, I want to show people how it's like, how commercial shoots are done. I want to show BTS.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what you can expect, I guess.
Well, lots to look forward to.
Yes.
Joshua, thank you for this very, very interesting conversation.
Thank you very much.